dedicate this lecture to my family and my friends, to my colleagues and our clients, and most particularly to my mother-in-law, who is 101. From all of them, I have learned so much, and without them, I would not be giving this lecture today. Courage and kindness are two of the most important ingredients in the recipe for living well. One of my hopes for this course is that you will take the opportunity to think about what you could or should be doing now in order to help you live well as long as you can and as long as you live. I'm aware that this is not an easy subject for many, and it takes courage to think about the implications of living to be very old. It may surprise you to find that by thinking about your later years, you may ironically improve your quality of life along the way. Why is this? I think it's because at each stage of your life, you will be clearer about what really matters. I have a fascinating job. I and my colleagues work with people who are preparing for or are already in retirement. I've been doing this for over 25 years, and so many of those clients who came to us over 20 years ago when they were in their 60s are now in their 80s. We've listened to them as they have gradually moved from living completely independently to gradually needing more help. In a number of instances, our clients in their 50s have asked us to help their parents as they go through this transition to less independent living. By helping people make a coherent connection between the way they seek to live and their resources, not just their financial resources, we are often able to make a very positive contribution to people's lives. Our work is not just about the destination of financial clarity and security. It's also about the journey and quality of life along the way. We all have limited resources. The purpose of our planning work is to help people be as clear as they can about what really matters to them, to have the conversations they need to have within themselves and with those around them, and having done this, be in a position to make informed choices. Money of itself is not interesting, in my view, which may seem odd in a financial planner, but it's true. To slightly misquote a local Afrikaans artist, money is just a form of energy to be used in the service of your principles. It's important to garner enough to be able to live without having to compromise your most deeply held values. What you have brings you a collection of choices, and all being well, at each phase of your life, there will be something in that collection of choices that pleases you. The purpose of the planning exercise and the regular reviews which should follow is to enable people to take responsibility for their financial well-being, make informed choices, and deal with the consequences without feeling anxious, unhappy, or resentful. I would like to touch on the concept which economists call opportunity cost. Out of interest, how many of you are familiar with this term? All right. Okay, some of you are, some of you aren't. But the ones who think they aren't probably are, but you don't know it by that name. But I'm going to use that term, so let's have an example. The cost of you being here this evening, for most of you, is the course fee. An example of the opportunity cost of us being here this evening is that we're not sitting out on this evening on a beautiful veranda with a glass of wine in our hand looking at a beautiful Cape Town view. We're not going for a walk in the forest. We're not going for a walk along the beach. Nor are we sitting at home in front of a computer paying our bills. These are some of the many alternative activities, ways that we could have chosen to be involved in right now. activities we could have chosen to be involved in right now. Not doing these is a way of expressing the opportunity cost of us being here this evening. But here we are, so let's press on. Now, how does opportunity cost relate to my opening statements about the importance of courage and kindness, and the hope that you will think carefully about what you could or should be doing now in order to help you live as well as you can as long as you live? Well, quite simply, the choices you make on a daily basis have consequences for your health, your emotional, and your financial well-being. This is why we use, at Fiscal, the term integrated financial planning, not just financial planning. Integrated financial planning is not a term used in the financial services industry. It's the term we use until we find a better one. So if any of you can think of a better description, which clearly conveys the important idea that the purpose of what we're doing is to help make a coherent connection between the way you seek to live and your resources, not just your financial resources, your suggestions will be very welcome. This is not just about crunching numbers, selling you an investment, redrafting your will to bring it up to date with legal developments. It's about helping you be clear about the consequences of your lifestyle choices. It includes helping you review and possibly modify some of these to make informed decisions about how to allocate your resources, your finances, your time, your energy, both how you spend and invest your money, and consider carefully the consequences not only for you, but those around you as well. The choices you are making daily will have a significant effect on the array of choices open to you as you get older, particularly if your financial or family resources are very limited. You can choose to be clear about your circumstances, or you can sail through a fog of hope, not wanting to think about when your ship might be dashed on the rocks of high medical expenses, or just simply not wanting to face the possibility that you will spend all your money and still be alive. On whom will you become dependent if you run out of money? Are these people aware that this responsibility may fall on their shoulders? And are they preparing for it? Will siblings cooperate, or will there be discord and strife as elderly relatives need more and more help? Is there someone you can depend on who has sufficient resources to help you and do it with a good grace? Particularly for those without children or close family who can help, or whose family relationships are fractured, this can be a very serious issue. Before I get into some detail about the structure of a useful financial plan, and keeping in mind the idea of opportunity cost, and my question, what could I should or should I be doing today, let's look at three areas which are particularly pertinent for older people. One is avoiding falls, two is deafness, and three is one which is generally not spoken about, but which is highly likely to affect anyone who lives to be very old: incontinence. When Professor Ruth Watson and I were first discussing what we should try and cover in this course, she emphasized the need to air some issues which people try to pretend do not exist, but which for many become very real. Now, before you retreat into a state of shocked embarrassment over the third one, let's first talk about avoiding falls. Falls among the elderly are a major public health issue. In the US alone, the cost of fall-related injuries among people over the age of 65 is expected to reach more than $54 billion by the year 2020. I said 54 billion, not million. As we get older, we are increasingly at risk of falling. In addition to the cost of medical treatment, perhaps the greater cost is the potentially serious erosion of quality of life. A fall can be very painful, but perhaps more seriously, it can shatter a person's confidence. My own mother had to move to a nursing home as a direct consequence of an avoidable fall. So this brings me to a very important statement. it's not there, never mind. But the statement is that the most important form to avoid is the first one. Now, I'm going to take that away, because it's not meant to be there yet. What can you do to reduce the risk of falling? There's a lot you can do. One of the best things I'm told is to practice Tai Chi, which is the ancient, gentle form of the ancient Chinese martial art. It's performed with grace and balance and brings both physical and psychological benefits. Stanford University's Farewell to Falls program dwells on a number of key areas where you can take action. I should add that each area may have monetary costs attached to it. The aim is to help you keep your balance, and it may be cheaper and less painful to pay for preventative action than to end up in the emergency room and possibly in hospital or permanently in frail care. Here are the key areas. The first is medical management. This includes a medication review, checking your vision, and improving your posture and gait. As people age, they are often prescribed more and more drugs. It's sensible to review how these different medications may be interacting with each other. Medicines have potential side effects. If medication 1 may cause drowsiness, and medication 2 may also cause drowsiness, and you're taking a sleeping pill at night, well, you might expect not to be quite so alert during the day. With regard to vision, having cataracts increases the risk of suffering a fall. In a research project in the USA, where half a group of people waiting for cataract operations were operated on immediately, the incidence of falls was substantially less than those who had to wait over a period of months for their surgery. I'm not giving you medical advice, but I encourage you not to delay in seeking it if you have cataracts which can safely be removed. Now, I'd like Madi to volunteer to be a volunteer. Now, Madi is going to stand on one foot.
I'll hold on to something.
That's very good. Put the other foot down now. Now, I'd like you to relax, pause. Now, I'd like you to do it again. Onto one foot. And now, close your eyes.
Yeah. Here we go.
Now. If that, doesn't
be a ballet dancer.
If that doesn't convince you that you use your sight to help you balance, I don't know what will. You can try it at home, but make sure you're doing it where you can touch something to help you regain your balance, because I don't want to be sued for you all falling down and breaking anything. But it's a very clear message, I think. As a younger person, if you trip, you're much less likely to fall. Younger people will generally be fitter and stronger and can pull themselves up and correct themselves before they fall. Shortened and weak muscles and poor posture affect your ability to balance and to save yourself if you're in danger of falling. You can imagine an elderly person will have slower reactions and be less able to save themselves. Imagine how much more difficult if that person is dizzy from the side effects of medication, half blinded by cataracts, and they're much more likely to hit the floor, possibly breaking one or more limbs in the process, possibly having struck their head on the corner of the table on the way. So it's a bit too horrible to contemplate, but it does happen. This means that being physically active at any age is important. If you've not taken exercise as a younger person, I'm told it's still never too late to start. If you hate taking exercise, and some people do, try and find an activity that you can tolerate on a regular basis. You might think this crazy, but standing opposite someone playing catch with a ball will do you good. So I expect to hear that at Pinewood Village and in Constantia Place, that there are rows of people playing catch from now on. Now we get to the slide. There we go. Now, the other thing that you have to scrutinize carefully is your home or any environment in which you spend your time. Ensuring your home is not full of hazards, which can increase the likelihood of you falling. Now, here's a picture of a living room of an elderly person. If this belonged to someone of whom you were very fond, what would you set about changing? Yes. Oh, sorry, I'm doing the wrong thing here. Yes, first of all, the rug goes. There's far too much in here, and given that the door is here, there's no clear path to the kettle and the fridge and so on. Well, that room is clearly a disaster waiting to happen. The amount of clutter needs to be reduced, and if you do move the rug, but the rug has emotional significance for the person, have it cleaned and put it on wall. Now, let's look at another room. In contrast, how's that? Spick and span. It was custom built for an elderly person. On the surface it looks fine, but can you spot the problem? Sorry? I'm a bit deaf. Sorry. Yes, yes. Now here comes the problem. Well, you think that's the problem, but I actually know that that's the problem. Because this is redundant. The person who used this bathroom, hang on, I must get my order right here. The handrail beside the loo is not in the right position. The person who uses this bathroom was putting her hands in the door jamb in order to pull herself up from the loo. And we'll draw veil over what would have happened if there'd been a gust of wind and the door had slammed on her fingertips. So, having established that the door should be firmly closed, all seemed well with using the door handle as a support for pulling herself up. And we have a client whose husband had a stroke, and he used the door handle, and what she did was she turned it through 90 degrees so that it was easier for him to grab. And that was fine. He was fine with that. But when I checked this handle, I noticed that it was designed to have four screws on each side, and on one side, in this case, there were three screws, and on the other side, there were two. So, the additional screws have since been applied, and so far the system has worked beautifully. But anything that an older person is going to rely on to support them, make sure that it really is stable. If you're interested and you would like more ideas, I can give you the link to the video made by the Stanford University people, and you can watch it on the internet at home. Now we come to deafness. Why is it that some people refuse to learn to use a hearing aid? Please notice I did not say refuse to use, I said refuse to learn how to use a hearing aid. As a local ENT specialist put it to me, you must understand a hearing aid is not a radio. It does not broadcast what you want to hear. It's an amplifier. Why do some people who wear aids take them out when they're eating? Well, it amplifies all the sounds, including the chewing, which makes a hell of a din, apparently. So you have to learn how to use an aid and learn again how to discriminate. It's not easy. You have to practice, and you have to practice every day. A person with normal hearing can discriminate all the time. For example, when you go to a concert, you can concentrate on certain instruments, and they will come to the fore. If you live by the sea, you can learn to cut out the sound of the ocean so that you can listen to music on your hi-fi, unaware of the crashing waves. But the ability to discriminate tends to decrease with age and hearing impairment, and hence the general recommendation to learn how to use an aid sooner rather than later. A word on avoiding damaging your hearing. When I asked the ENT surgeon what could or should one do to cherish one's hearing, his first answer surprised me. He said you need good information. What did he mean? He meant that the medication or courses of treatment for certain illnesses have side effects which can include damaging your hearing. But these are often not discussed before you embark on the treatment. Other things he mentioned included avoiding loud noises. These can be inflicted in the workplace or by certain leisure activities. Listening to very loud music is an example. I have been very briefly at a disco where the music was so loud that it was physically painful to be in the room. Needless to say, when I asked the young disc jockey to turn the music down, and I was entitled to do that because I was paying him, by the way, he couldn't hear what I was saying. He was in his 20s and his hearing was shot already. The vuvuzela is the friend of anyone whose business is selling hearing aids. Many will suffer from tinnitus in their later years as a result of noise damage till your hearing arrangements. And if you don't know what tinnitus is, please ask me at the end, because it has coloured my life. Deafness can become extremely socially isolating. So here is another example of opportunity cost. Choosing not to learn how to use a hearing aid can make you more difficult, even exasperating, to live with. Please bear in mind that choosing not to hear as well as you could does not only affect you, it affects those around you. When you can't hear me, I may raise my voice, and my body language is likely to convey some aggression. Of course, the aggression will not be missed by the person who's supposed to be listening to you, and hurt feelings and tension can result. But sometimes a deaf person will surprise you. And I tell this story against myself. One day, when I was assisting my mother-in-law in the bathroom, I got a rather pressing desire to break wind. Shall I? Shan't I? She's very deaf. Shall I? Shan't I? And I did. And she immediately turned to me and said, "Is there someone at the door?" I asked a urologist what could or should a person be doing today to ward off incontinence. His response was that there are four main causes. I'll not go into the first three. We'll put those down to bad luck. But the fourth you can do something about. You can daily practice clinching. Or as an elderly female client who had treatment for the problem described it to me, she said, "Well, it's actually more like winking." Rather surprisingly, this leads me to the financial planning part of my talk. Now, remember opportunity cost. You have a choice every day to clench or wink, and in doing so, tone and strengthen the relevant muscles. Incidentally, there are other benefits to doing this exercise regularly, but they are beyond the scope of this lecture. In my experience, lots of people say they don't want to live much beyond the age of 80. But if you attended Sarah's lecture yesterday, you should by now be clear that many of you, those who haven't already, will see 80, but perhaps 90, and possibly, like my mother-in-law, 100. So what is the connection with financial planning? Well, quite simply, if you need 4 pads a day to manage your encroaching incontinence, and you need these from the age of 85, and you live another 10 years, you could spend between 40 and 50,000 rand in today's money on pads alone. If you can think of things, better things to do with 40 or 50,000, I recommend you start clenching today. You might save yourself a lot of money. I mentioned earlier about the usefulness of making a coherent connection between the way you seek to live and your resources. This is where an integrated financial plan comes into its own. Please note that financial planning is not the same as investment management. Once you've worked out a plan and know what level of return you require on your assets and the level of risk that you are willing and able to tolerate, you can decide how your capital should be invested, managed, and by whom. Given that people are living longer and healthcare costs will tend to rise faster than inflation, you may be wondering whether you'll be able to afford to maintain your current or desired lifestyle in years to come. If you're not sure, preparing an integrated financial plan can bring a number of important benefits. I will mention 7 here. Developing a well-thought-out documented plan which is regularly reviewed should give you a clear understanding of your precise situation rather than what you think, hope, or fear may be the position. Knowledge is power. It should enable you to make informed choices and decisions given your resources and your priorities. You'll be ensuring your affairs are in order if you were to become seriously ill or die suddenly. Helping deal with financial matters as they arise and regular reviews help to make sure you get things done. Nice people will help you get things done. Dealing with anxieties constructively is a very important part of the process, and facing and dealing with your fears can reduce your worries considerably. helping you to invest appropriately to achieve the returns you require. And all of this, we hope, would lead to peace of mind so that you can enjoy yourself and know how you're going to manage financially at any stage of your life, but particularly in your later years. It can be very helpful to get professional assistance. I have a long list of things which you should be aware of and qualities you might seek in a financial planner. So if you'll bear with me, I'm going to work through the list. Your financial planner, you should inquire what sort of experience and qualifications they have. While qualifications are not a guarantee of competence, they're usually a good start. The Certified Financial Planner, or CFP designation, is a good indicator of professional training, and for someone to maintain their CFP designation requires them to attend continuing professional development courses and events. You should ask what the advisor is licensed to advise you on. In terms of the legislation, which we call FAS, which governs the work advisors do with you, an advisor may only recommend or sell you investments which fall within the ambit of his or her license. Who employs the advisor or planner? How are they remunerated? I'm still on the same page. Do they earn a salary, charge fees, or do they earn commissions on investments or other insurance products which they sell you, or is it some combination of these? Understand that the method of remuneration may colour the advice and recommendations you are given. It is only human. It is practical. A planner who charges fees for services as opposed to earning commissions on sales may be in a better position to advise you wholeheartedly in your interests. Is the person listening to you carefully? Do they show that they've understood your objectives and concerns? It may be that they can help you clarify your objectives by alerting you to issues which you have not previously considered, but which will be important for your decision making. Are they telling you what you want to hear or what you need to know? And that is a very important one. Do they show that they've understood your objectives and concerns? It may be that they can help you clarify these. are they telling you what you need to know? Do you think they're putting your interests before their own? In other words, acting professionally. Is the written material that you are given in clear language which you can understand? If you don't understand something, are they able to explain things clearly to you? Please ensure that you receive a written record of advice which is clearly reasoned and is a coherent response to your needs, circumstances, and objectives. Never suspend your critical faculties as to the character of the person advising you. Are you confident that they're advising you wholeheartedly and intelligently in your interests, placing your needs above their own desire to earn fees or commissions? And one final point, please remember that investments which can be volatile, for example, those with substantial holdings in shares, are not necessarily better or worse than those that are less volatile. You need to know what is appropriate for you. If nothing else, here is an idea that you might want to think about. In your relationship with your planner, do you feel that you are the client or your money is the client? Many people find financial matters extremely difficult to deal with. My colleagues and I are very conscious that there's the financial equivalent of the person who becomes aware of a lump or growth on their body but won't go to the doctor in case it is cancer. So many people fear finding out if they have sufficient resources to fund the lifestyle they desire, and many more live in fear of running out of money before they die. It's our experience that some of the most important work we do is to help people ascertain whether they should be anxious or whether, in fact, things may be manageable. There is nearly always something you can do to improve your situation. You could order your affairs better, invest more appropriately, or modify your attitude, and in doing so, enhance your quality of life. It's very important that you be as honest as you can be about how you think, feel, and behave in relation to money and financial matters. Those of you who have read Hamlet may remember Polonius' advice to his son, "This above all, to thine own self be true." And I quote that regularly in client meetings. I'm now going to give you a framework for a financial plan. How do you start the process? The best way to start the process is by telling your story. For someone to guide you, you need to describe your family circumstances and share what is really important to you. It's our experience that telling your story is a powerful first step to clarifying your financial and emotional needs. Articulating your feelings can be a crucial guide to what is really important to you. Your story helps explain who you are and what matters most to you, creating a clearer understanding of the transitions you face now and anticipate in the future. What the likely implications of these are from an emotional and financial point of view. Remember, we're trying to make that coherent connection between the way you seek to live and your resources. And in the end, the financial side is all about cash flow, how much you need and when. It may sound harsh that we would reduce your life to cash flow, but we do that in order to allow it to blossom. One of the advantages of telling your story to a third party is that in doing so, you will become clearer about your priorities. Now, having become clear about these, it's important to write the following down. First of all, what you have. Assets. All of them. Not just some of them. We do sometimes have a client who reveals a little investment after 15 years of being a client. But write all of them down. Ditto for your debts. Don't worry about that loan or forget about the bond on the house. It's all important. Write it all down. And also write down what income you have. Do you have pension rights? Do you have rental income? All of those things. Now you have to write down what you need in order to meet all your expenses, your monthly expenses, and the expenses that arise during the course of a year, irregularly, on an ad hoc basis, and that tells you what your cash flow needs to be now. And then it's sensible to estimate how this may change, very likely increase as you get older. Additional expenses, that is capital expenditure, what we call CapEx. Examples would include replacing a car, which is a big item. Travel can be a big expenditure, particularly if you have family who live overseas. Medical costs, because we know that medical inflation is higher than ordinary inflation. And in the case of a couple, the costs that arise when the first of you dies. This would be the funeral tea, possibly a wake, who knows? Taxes, executor's fees, and so on. Let us look at some examples of the objectives that many people have in common, all of which have financial and cash flow implications. The first one would be able to be financially independent of your children or other family members for the rest of your days. Many of our clients have that objective. To be able to live physically independently of your children, not to be a burden to them. I'm a little concerned that these people may have underestimated what they, as older people, can offer their children. But still, it's a very worthy ambition, and it helps the children to like you. To be able to see or visit the people that matter most to you if they don't live in Cape Town. What if you cannot travel to see them? I mean, you're very old, you're not well, you've got arthritic hips and you can't sit for 12 and a half hours on a plane. Can you help fund their visits to you? To be able to afford the medical and other care of your choice. Now, all of those have obvious financial implications. But you can have other objectives, what we might call soft objectives. which may or may not have financial consequences. I haven't asked their permission to say this, but we do know one couple, and I hope they'll forgive me. When I asked them what their objectives were, the husband said that he, and his wife concurred, wants to remain interesting to his son. In other words, they would like him to want to visit and spend time with them, not just to do it out of a sense of duty. I think that's a brilliant objective. A different, more positive way of expressing the desire about not becoming a burden to him. Having become clear about the objectives, you now need to calculate the return you require on your capital if you're to have a good prospect of being able to fund all the activities and expenses listed in your plan. Again, you may require professional assistance to do this. Your plan should not only note the lovely things you want to be able to afford, but also the regular and the mundane, and should allow some flexibility so that you can cope with unexpected emergencies or changes in your plans. Changes could be lovely opportunities, or they could be unpleasant things thrust upon you. The point of reviewing a plan on a regular basis is to check the assumptions which you've made and see if they remain valid or if they need to be changed and your plan and calculations reworked. Please note that your plan should not be predicated on simply trying desperately to get the highest return in the shortest space of time. That can be the route to misery and disaster, and we recommend that you ensure you have a clear sense of how much risk you need to take, and only take more than that as a conscious, informed decision. Now, let me dwell briefly on expenditure, because expenditure figures form a vital part of the calculations regarding the return you require. I spoke earlier about deafness. Let's assume that by the age of 80, you're getting deaf. Holding a conversation is becoming difficult and frustrating, and I'm told that hearing aids generally last between 5 and 7 years, and then need to be replaced. You may be fortunate and find that an aid costing up to 15,000 Rand works well for you. So one hearing aid costing 15,000, which has to be replaced every 5 years, may mean in your lifetime you buy 3 aids costing a total of 45,000 Rand in today's money. Double that to 90,000 if you need aids in both ears. But what if you love music? If you want hi-fi quality aids, you may pay as much as 60 to 65,000 Rand per aid. Such aids will allow you to adjust the area of amplification. So in the concert hall, you will set it to concentrate in the direction of the orchestra. It will not concentrate on the person in the row behind you who is coughing. What a pleasure. An inexpensive aid would not discriminate between the two. So having realized this, I have incorporated in my own plan an amount of 130,000, I assume I'll need 2 aids, every 5 years, starting from the age of 80. All being well, this will allow me to enjoy my daily dose of Mozart for the rest of my life. As I'm in danger of living to be 100, I may need 4 sets. That gives me a total for hearing aids of 520,000 over my lifetime. And how will that affect my choices today? Back to our friend, opportunity cost. Personally, I would rather be able to afford the best hearing aids than drive a newer, more expensive car. I'm happy to eat out less often if doing so would help me provide for the hearing aids. And I may decide to work for longer in order to build more capital for my later years. That's if my colleagues will have me, of course. These are conscious choices, which I'm taking now, and I'm not yet 60. Here are some graphs which help to illustrate this. So, let's pretend, don't worry, I don't think I'm going to do this. I retire at 65, and I never need hearing aids. So this is first prize, as far as the hearing aids are concerned. Under this scenario, I would still have capital when I'm 100. Okay, so I think I'll be okay. But what if I need 130,000 Rand on hearing aids every 5 years from the age of 80. Not so good. I don't know if you can you all see that? Mm-hmm. I'll tell you. I run out before I'm 99. Now, I might be a very grumpy person if my hearing aids have just died and I'm still around and I can't afford the posh hearing aids that I've got used to. It might be very difficult at that point. So, let's take the worst scenario. I've said I'm going to plan them from age 80, but what if my tinnitus gets the better of me and I need them from the age of 70? That's another two sets of aids. And now, my plan is looking frail if I'm going to be lived to be very old. Because now I'm not getting to 100. So, if I decide to work until I'm 68, I still get the posh hearing aids at 70. I'm fine again. Can you see that? I hope you can all see that I'm fine. So, this informs my choice now that I would rather work for longer and be able to afford something that I think will be very important to me. We've touched on the technology of hearing aids, and of course the likelihood is that this will continue to improve, which may drive up the cost of hearing aids, or it may be that better ones end up costing less because the very posh ones cost so much more. There are other technologies which we enjoy you to embrace if you have not already done so. Now, may I ask you, more audience participation, does anyone in this room not use a computer? There's no shame in this, I hasten to add. All right? Yes, there are a number of people who do not do that. How many of you have elderly relatives or friends who do not use a computer? Lots more hands come up. Lots of hands. Now, not learning how to use a touch screen device, such as this tablet, cuts you off from the internet, which is a vast library, an immense electronic resource. No longer is the lack of typing skills a serious impediment. You can just do this and you can get it to work. Those of you who love coming to summer school may find in your 90s that it's physically a bit demanding to come to all the lectures and sessions. Well, that's a pity. While it's not quite the same, you can, however, via device such as this, have summer school lectures available to you 24 hours a day, every day of the year. In fact, come to think of it, you might be able to hear them better because you can plug in your earphones and that's all you'll hear. So all is not lost. So into your capital expenditure in your financial plan not only goes enough money to pay for any pills, potions and procedures you may require, but enough to purchase and upgrade your tablet. Your tablet connects you to the podcasts of the summer school, thousands of TED Talks, if you don't know about TED Talks, come and ask me later, Coursera, which make available online university courses, some offered by top universities around the world. You can speak to family and friends using Skype. Some of you, have you all heard of Skype? Mm-hmm. Good. At possibly a fraction of the cost of an international telephone call if you're wanting to talk to family overseas. All you have to pay for are the device and the bandwidth which gives you access. So, an allowance for uncapped bandwidth might go into your monthly budget as well. Now we come to ordering your affairs. Having worked out your plan and the investment return you require, it remains for you to order your affairs. This means ensuring that your will is up to date and the beneficiary nominations on any retirement funds or annuities, life policies and endowments are as they should be and dovetail appropriately with the terms of your will and your wishes. It's sensible to ensure that your wishes can actually be put into effect. An estate planning exercise can establish if there will be sufficient cash or liquidity in your estate when you die, and whether you have provided appropriately for those who remain behind. There needs to be sufficient liquidity to pay funeral and other death-related expenses, settle your debts, pay all the taxes due, and cover the executor's fees. Some people really dislike the business of making a will. For them, it takes courage to do this. But please remember, it's a kindness to those you love to ensure that at any given time, your affairs are in order. This is another reminder that your integrated plan is not just about you, it's about those who are important to you. If you need to reconsider the terms of your will, or to check that your wishes can actually be put into effect, a qualified financial planner, often working in conjunction with an attorney who specialises in this area of law, should be able to guide you. I have one perhaps slightly controversial guideline here. I mentioned that we recommend using a lawyer who specialises in this area of law. As a rough rule of thumb, I would err on the side of consulting someone who not only drafts wills, but also winds up estates. In other words, someone who bears the consequences of their own drafting. A lawyer who does not practice in this area of law, with the best of intentions, may be out of date on certain matters. People often say, I have a friend who is a lawyer. Well, it may not be kind to ask your friend who is a lawyer to help you with this. And I beg you not to cut and paste from someone else's will and hope that all will be well. Some people whom we know who did that have visited much unnecessary happiness on their heirs, all in the name of saving a little bit of money. What does it cost to make a will? Let's say it costs about £1,000. And you think that's a lot of money. So why would I spend £1,000? I think it much far rather do lots of other things with that £1,000, but maybe keep it in reserve for the will. Let's say your current will was drawn up 20 years ago, and in response to the law at the time, you made some certain bequests to a trust. This may have been optimal at the time, but in many instances, it may not be optimal now. The law has changed, and simpler, less expensive arrangements may work better, saving your heirs tens of thousands of rands in the process. Under those circumstances, the £1,000 cost of a new will is clearly a small price to pay. There's one proviso about this. What if the survivor lives to be very old and becomes incapable of managing their own affairs? This is a major area of difficulty that many South Africans face, because unlike in the UK, we do not have what is called an enduring power of attorney. If you are unable to manage your affairs, there are only two options. The first is to put your capital into a trust while you're still compos mentis, and that can cost a lot of money. The other is for your affairs to be managed by a curator. Each has its advantages and disadvantages. Now, in conclusion, we have covered some health issues, avoiding falls, deafness, and other indignities. We've talked about some of the ways you can benefit from a clear understanding of your financial circumstances. It's likely that you will not only be better off financially, but you're highly likely to feel better about life in general. That is one of the clear benefits of having a financial plan. Research has shown this. Sarah's unit did a big survey for HSBC, and that was one of the important results. We've looked at some areas where you can make conscious choices now, which will help you to live well as you age. It's up to you to decide what your attitude will be. Your quality of life may be more governed by how you choose to deal with what happens in your life than what actually happens. I'm not going to say that to somebody who's just lost somebody who's very close to them, but I do know people who, having been widowed, were not somehow able to do the work that you have to do to recover from that, and they lived a long, what I can only call a half-life, because they didn't rediscover who they were and they didn't reinvent their life. On a very personal note, I would like to share something of my own experience of helping to care for my 101-year-old mother-in-law who lives with us. People are often very kind and tell me how splendid I am for allowing my mother-in-law to live with us. I want to make it very, very clear. This is important. It is not me who makes this possible. It is my mother-in-law. Why do I say this? There are three things which I have observed about my mother-in-law which I am very clear I should try and imbibe, and which I should, in which I should try and emulate her, if I possibly can. I'm not sure if I can do it, but I'm going to give it a good shot. The first is, it doesn't apply to me yet, but I'm hoping it will apply one day. She obeys the first 10 rules of being a mother-in-law. Rule 1, thou shalt not interfere. Rule 2, thou shalt not interfere. Rule 3, altogether, thou shalt not interfere. We didn't go up to number 10. The second thing is, she does not demand things. The consequence of this is that people give gladly and enjoy her company. This is not to say she is not stubborn about some things, and that she does not have her own quirks and eccentricities. I have written this talk out, and I did think of giving her a copy, but I think I might edit that little bit out before I give it to her. But she does not demand, and this makes it so much easier to give. On the subject of giving, generally people find giving easier than receiving. There are people who are takers, but we're not going to deal with them here. Giving usually gives you a good feeling. Receiving may make you uncomfortable. As you age and you make the transition from fully independent living to needing increasing amounts of help, you have to receive. And so the third, and perhaps the most important lesson from my mother-in-law, and I think it's one of her great gifts, is that she receives in uncomplicated ways. I don't know how she has arrived at this way of being, though I have some ideas. I think it has a lot to do with doing the work you have to do at each stage of life, and having done it, be ready to move on without resentment. I think because she's done the work she has to do and has come to terms with her life, she is able most of the time to live in the moment and is generally content and happy. This gift of receiving in uncomplicated ways makes helping her much easier and more manageable. How can we cultivate such an attitude? I don't know, but maybe this idea will help. If someone feels good about helping and giving, by needing their help, you are giving them an opportunity to feel good about themselves. I feel good about myself when people are kind to me and say how splendid it is that I allow my mother-in-law to live with me. It does make me feel good, but Granny has made it possible. Will that idea help me if I find myself in her position, needing help with most things? I don't know, but I think it may be a good place to start. I had a conversation the other day with a woman who described how her parents, now in their mid to late 80s, have recently changed. They used to be very active and were available to help the family and keen to do so. They were givers. Now, in quite a short space of time, they have both become grumpy and difficult and are not even being kind to each other anymore. One is becoming incontinent and the other complains of feeling dizzy. My sense is that they no longer know themselves. They think of themselves as givers, but they can't be anymore. But they've not yet made the transition, never mind made it with equanimity, to being receivers. Once they have made that transition, and I think it very possible that they will become happier and will probably be less demanding and difficult and may even be kind to each other again. I began by saying that courage and kindness are important ingredients in the recipe for living as well as you can as long as you live. It sometimes takes courage to be generous. It takes courage to hone yourself as you go through life so that you are well prepared for and deal with any difficulties in each phase as it unfolds. It's important not only to garner your financial, but also your inner resources. Could you live as well as you do if your financial resources were halved? That's a very good test. For many, that would be a big ask. Under those circumstances, your inner resources might be your best allies in salvaging quality of life under very difficult financial circumstances. It takes courage to make decisions about how you're going to live and accept the losses and constraints that age inevitably brings. The challenges of youth lead to personal growth. As you age, I encourage you to develop new ways of doing things and develop new interests. Courage is a useful ingredient, but in the end, only kindness matters. Thank you. Could everybody hear that? Yeah. The University of the Third Age has a booklet that they've published which has a whole swathe of things which is more than just what the executor needs. We encourage our clients to have a book where if you're the partner that does the medical aid and calls the plumber and fixes this and fixes that and does the other thing, is that you actually write that down to your partner so that if you get run over by a bus, they at least have the telephone numbers and the names to contact. In a marriage or a partnership, there's very often a division of labor in these things, in front of the speaker. There's a division of labor, and once this has been going on for 20 or 30 years, I mean, I haven't filled in a medical aid form since I've been married, and if somebody put one in front of me, I'd be very upset. I'd be very cross with my husband for dying before me as well. But it is a kindness to your partner just to have that backup. Those documents can be enormously helpful at a time of great stress. But thank you for mentioning that. Yes, a question here.
I found that yesterday's talk and today's talk both presume that the line goes down, 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 down. Now, I have a book here which I can't read because it's terribly scientific. It's all graphs and chemical stuff and so on, which says aging stops. It's very clear on this. It says once you reach a certain age, say 92, then all the old people in the old age home go on into a plane like that, and there is no more decline. And this book is on how can we bring that age of 92 forwards to 80 or maybe even 70. It can be done, and they're working on it. That would change both yesterday's and today's lecture drastically.
Well, my experience with granny is different.
Yeah. I didn't say it, this book says it.
Thank you. Any other questions?
You're going to talk about tinnitus.
Tinnitus. I don't know. I always called it tinnitus. Yeah. I am the way I am because of tinnitus. Not mine, my father's. He was wounded in the war when he was training. He had the most dreadful tinnitus. He was training on Salisbury Plain. He dropped a mortar into his mortar thing, and instead of turning his head away, being an intelligent bloke with a degree from Oxford, he put his ear down beside where the bang would go off. And that was tinnitus for the rest of his life. And the extraordinary thing is, there's a string quartet by a composer called Smetana called From My Life. And in the middle of this, the music stops and the violin goes, and Smetana's note was exactly the same as my father's. Now, I don't know what Smetana did with his note, but my father manipulated the family every day for the rest of his life. I have slight tinnitus, and I hope I don't behave like that. But I am the way I am because of the way we had to be because of his tinnitus.
Is there a noise in your ears the whole time?
It varies from person to person. Different people have... Some people get rumbling lorries. Other people get rustling noises. My father had this high E on the violin. And the ENT surgeon that I spoke to said that for some people it gets so bad that they actually commit suicide. It drives people crazy. I think it had a shot at driving my father crazy. He was certainly very difficult to live with. And his tinnitus was present in our lives every day. I think he might have dealt with it differently, but I haven't walked in his shoes, so I can't say for sure. No, there's no... I did read once that if you take snuff, it helps. But and I bought him some snuff and he wouldn't take it, and that made me really angry with him because I was getting very tired of his tinnitus. Anyway. Yes, question here.
Can I ask if you could name any medication that would affect hearing? Because I had a cancer treatment 15 years ago and I now have hearing aids, and they say I'm very young to have this particular thing, and I'm wondering if it could have been chemotherapy.
It could. I understand that it could have been. I'm not a medic, but it is one of the treatments that I was told can affect your hearing. Yes, some antibiotics that are used in the treatment of TB also can have that effect. Yes, at the back. Yes. I thought I'd done well by just identifying that. I can't describe it to you. It's just that she's there and she needs to be helped with this, and you do it, and it's just uncomplicated. It's not a big deal. She says thank you. She's pleasant. But the only way I can describe it is that she receives in uncomplicated ways. And I do really think it's a gift. And I think that particularly having had this conversation the other day with the woman whose parents have suddenly become grumpy, I think that this is maybe something very important for us to think about. I don't know how you learn to receive. I think that one of the reasons that she may be good at it is that she may have had more practice than other people as a younger woman, because she was the wife of an Anglican priest, and I'm sure kind parishioners, because they had no money, would have brought things, and if it was a chicken to roast, that was great, but it might have been some horrendous pot of jam that they couldn't stand, and she would have learnt to receive these equally graciously. I mean, she is quite a gracious woman in the first place, but I wouldn't be certain that she didn't have to work at it. I don't know how you work it. I would think it's different for everybody because everybody's coming from a different place. But I do think that as something that you would try and embrace in your life, I do think it's well worth thinking about. And it's vital if you're going to live to be very old and be dependent on people to do a tremendous amount for you just to deal with the ordinary activities of daily living. Yes? I'm sorry?
Walk as part of the graciousness and so on. There's warmth in the smile and like to be with
her. Yes, she's wonderfully polite, and again, this definitely comes from being the wife of the parish priest. She has a wonderful stock of opening lines. So she was once sitting in our kitchen with her son, who had come to visit from Edinburgh, whom she hadn't seen for many years. And she looked at him intently, and she said to him, "And tell me, how is your mother?" And this was obviously, if she was stuck, she didn't know this person's name, maybe she knew it herself, but let's try that one. And how is your mother? And then, of course, the person wouldn't talk. So, you know, she's quite smart, but in that instance, she got it a bit wrong. But, I mean, she met Ray the other evening, and she will say, "How lovely to have the opportunity to see you." You know, I mean, yes, it's good manners, it's polite, but she does it from the heart. She means it. But she has learned it as well. And I think it's a good example of how, if you make an effort in that way, for her, it has brought wonderful rewards. I mean, if you were to meet her, I nearly brought her, but she wouldn't have heard a word because she didn't learn to hear, use the hearing aids. So, fortunately, I have a broad Belfast accent and I enunciate pretty clearly. Yes.
I imagine that she got over that feeling guilty that she's being a burden to you. And I think if you can get over that, and she is, you say, very polite and gracious, then that is first prize.
I think that's an important point, that she doesn't feel guilty.
She doesn't feel guilty, she's being a burden, and she is obviously gracious, polite, thanks you. And so she's kind of hit the jackpot.
Thank you for that observation, because I think it goes back to the idea about not wanting to be a burden.
Mm-hmm. Which none of us want to be.
She doesn't want to be a burden, but at the same time she's there, and she needs this, and so we just get on with it. But I can't stress enough that it is she who makes these good things happen around her. If she were different, I'm no martyr, I can assure you. If she were crabbed, difficult, and horrible, I would do the basics, and then I would say, right, that's enough, that's it, I'm not doing any more. But the point is, we do what she needs. If I have to go and do a message, I'll say, "Come on, Granny, do you want to come in the car?" And the only thing is, you just have to accept that she takes a bit longer to get there than the rest of us. And she may want to pay a call first. So you have to allow sometimes 10 minutes. But why not? Then I feel good about the fact that I've taken her. So she's given me this opportunity to feel good about myself.
Some people call that Christian. Just having a Christian approach.
Well, she's a very good Christian.
May I ask you to please thank Kate for an incredibly beautifully and warmly presented talk.
I don't know how to switch over that.